I'm Matt Wells. This is Media Talk. Coming up this week, Google gives in to Murdoch in the war over online news. Also in the podcast...
You've got a really bad attitude, sweetheart.
Lazy, deluded, very little talent. Everything I don't want. Well, you ask for an opinion, sweetheart, you're getting one.
Complaints to Ofcom have doubled in the last 4 years, and Simon Cowell's X Factor tops the list. Is TV getting nastier, or are we just more easily offended? Plus, The Telegraph gets a new editor, and star columnist Simon Heffer takes a sabbatical from his righteous indignation. And...
My castaway this week is Morrissey. Rock star and cultural icon, he is the outsider's outsider. As the Smiths' frontman, his harsh romanticism spoke to a generation hungry for a tortured truth they could recognise.
We've given you the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare, and now you can take the podcast of Desert Island Discs with you too. What would Roy Plumley say? This is Media Talk from The Guardian. It's the day after the Media Guardian Christmas party, so please forgive the gravelly throats and occasional slurring. Here with me in the pod is John Plunkett, Media Guardian's radio correspondent, the media monkey, and the murderer of Phil Collins on the karaoke, apparently, I've heard.
That's right, Sussudio, which is, I'm sure, on top of everyone's all-time favourite hits.
I have seen the video evidence. Poor old producer Ben in the control room hasn't spoken all day, you realise this, so that he can save what's left of his voice for talkback. I hear that his karaoke highlight, he can't speak sadly because he's not on mic, but I hear that his karaoke highlight was Jolene.
Yes, it was. If only he wasn't on mic yesterday. That's all I can say. No offence, producer Ben.
Maggie Brown is Media Guardian columnist and biographer, Channel 4. She's here this week too. And like me, Maggie, you took the sensible option. We were both tucked up in bed at 10 o'clock after a mug of cocoa. Different beds, I should stress.
I was saving my voice for you.
Yeah, thank you, Maggie. Yes, yes. No, I'm slightly suffering from the old winter lurgy, but enough self-indulgence. We'll start this week with a story so seismic I was invited on Sky News to talk about it. Yes, Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation has drawn first blood in its battle with Google over what he sees as the theft of his company's online journalism. The search giant announced it'll allow publishers of paid-for content to limit the amount of free access users have to their websites. We'll hear Maggie and John's thoughts on all of this in a moment. First, here is the dirty digger himself speaking to the US media regulator in Washington at the FTC's hearings on the future of journalism.
We believe fiercely that the key to competing during difficult times is to invest more in journalistic content, not less. Quality content is not free. In the future, good journalism will depend on the ability of a news organization to attract customers by providing news and information they are willing to pay for. The old business model, based on advertising only, is dead. Critics say people won't pay. I believe they will, but only if we give them something of good and useful value. Our customers are smart enough to know that you don't get something for nothing. It goes to some of our friends online too. Yet there are those who think they have a right to take our news content and use it for their own purposes without contributing a penny to its production. These people are not investing in journalism. They are feeding off the hard-earned efforts and investments of others. And their almost wholesale misappropriation of our stories is not fair use. To be impolite is theft.
Well, as you'd expect, the Keep the Web Free community have hit back. Here's Arianna Huffington, founder of the Huffington Post.
My point to Rupert Murdoch was that if he's serious about taking his content out of Google, he can do it right now, simply by clicking disallow. And the fact that he's not doing it, instead just kind of going on and on, calling new media nastier and nastier names, shows that he's not serious about it. For the last 5 years since we've launched the Huffington Post, I've always been about it's not either or, it's not old media versus new media, we're all in this together. But something has changed. You know, we're constantly being attacked for something that we're not doing. We're not stealing content, period. You know, we are aggregating within fair use rules. And if we were stealing content, somebody would have let us know.
That was Zsa Zsa Gabor doing a good impression of Arianna Huffington there. You can hear more from Arianna and our very own Jeff Jarvis on the latest edition of Media Talk USA, which is out now. Maggie, what do you think of what Rupert Murdoch's doing? He's going around calling Google thieves and brigands to anybody who will listen. But he's not actually doing anything about it, is he? He's not actually taking them to court. He's not delisting himself for Google. So what's he up to?
Well, he's trying, isn't he, to win concessions from them, it seems to me. I mean, he's also threatening, isn't he, to form an alliance with rivals Microsoft, which, again, doesn't sound very convincing.
But he doesn't mean any of this, does he?
I don't think he does, no. But I do think he is genuinely looking for a different way of raising revenue. And pay is one option. I wouldn't be at all surprised, actually, if what happens at the end of the day is that there will be areas of, say, The Times or his more general newspapers, which are behind paywalls, and there'll be other forms of maybe hot content or deals that they'll be offering as well. I think it will be a hybrid format that he's trying to work towards. But he's also, of course, signalling, if you like, a counterattack on the web is free and content is free kind of lobby. I'm actually in favour of it. I'm not in the Jeff Jarvis camp anymore. I've seen so much destruction.
You've seen the light.
No, it's not so much seeing the light. It's not that I think that there's any one single solution, but I just think that the position that we're in now is really, really bad for proper journalism. And he is right. It does cost money to investigate. I have a friend who runs a specialist publishing company behind a paywall. And he put out a big news story in his world. And when he analysed the coverage of it, there was a huge amount of coverage of a particular story. And there were only two organisations that bothered to make any original inquiries and do any original journalism. And this was a story that, you know, it was an oil story. So there is something quite wrong going on in the actual reporting of news stories at the moment, and there isn't any real additional effort going in.
We have talked about this before, John, but it does look as if there is a sort of shift in terms of the balance of power, or at least the people who are winning the PR war, isn't it? It does seem as if the paid for advocates have got the upper hand.
Yes, and not only that, but also for the first time, certainly for several years, it looks like Google, not exactly on the back foot, but they are rattled. And that's it's extraordinary. It's just been growing and growing and growing, and there's not been a sort of a blot on the landscape for them, and now something's happening, and the news providers are sort of fighting back. Now Google have said that we're going to restrict access to pay sites after you've looked at five stories. I mean, that's interesting, but it all comes down to whether, I mean, that's no good at all if people at the end of the day aren't prepared to pay for content, if no one's actually paying to look at stuff online. And I think what Murdoch there said, people don't expect to get stuff for free, but I think the problem is that they do.
Yeah, the problem is they do.
In TV, music, films, books, I mean, across the board, people are consuming stuff for free, and I don't. He's sort of battling against the tide, I think.
I mean, I suppose what he needs to do is he needs to. I mean, he does know. They know, don't they, that once they put up a paywall, they're going to lose a shed load of eyeballs. Nobody disputes that. The question is then can he charge advertisers the same amount of money, basically, for a fewer number of people, and by convincing the advertisers that the people he's got left are the real committed people, even if it is just a fraction of what he had before.
And how much their subscription level to make up for the advertising that he loses,
would you pay for
it's volume against value, isn't it, really? Yeah. I mean, you know, at the moment it sounds like millions and millions of hits, but if you can't actually monetize them properly, then it's a kind of almost a meaningless metric.
But Google says that that it's the newspaper industry and the media industry's fault for failing to monetize. We've sent you, says Google, all these millions of people. It's your job to, when you have them, to keep them on your site and find out how to monetize them. It's not our problem.
I'm sure it's not black and white, actually, because if I am absolutely convinced that the newspaper industry is not the most efficiently run. The advertising sides have been specialising in different kinds of areas. So I'm perfectly prepared to believe that it's not a black and white issue. But what you do have to say is that we can't go on the way we are, in my view, because we won't be here.
Black and white and red all over, isn't it?
Did you notice that Google
even Plunkett's not laughing because
I'm smiling inside.
It's an embarrassed zebra. No, it was to do with newspapers. It was you're the king of the terrible jokes, aren't you, Plunkett? I would have thought you'd have appreciated that. Mike, I interrupted you.
No. I was saying that even as Google was making this, as I see, rather tactical retreat, it was also proposed aggregating all of the property advertising sites in the country so that you would go to one place via Google for your property advertising. So that, again, potentially hitting another source of revenue.
Yeah, because Associated Newspapers, for example, you know, has got a big slice of the market in findaproperty.com or whatever their property website is.
And remember too, though, that they made a bit of a tactical retreat over printing books as well and giving authors a tiny amount of money. So there is a little bit of sense that there's a give and take going on here. They're not so insensitive to, if you like, world public opinion, that they're just sitting there and saying, ho, 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 we've got this fantastic business and, you know, kind of love us and get on with it.
Well, as you can imagine, this has been... I was just going to say, I'll come back to you in a second, but it's been a huge topic of conversation on the Media Guardian blogs. Parky Doctor says this is a bad solution that will add legitimacy to those who say that linking to a website is stealing. Linking is a fundamental part of how the web works. Well, that's what Ariana Huffington was saying as well. Melmo says, it looks to me like the politics of envy. A hugely fat cat grazing at the massive dish of inaccessible Google cream and digging its nails in the carpet. Also, Ariana Huffington said, not in that clip, but desperate times call for desperate metaphors. And that's one of them. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you. What were you going
to
say?
I fear it probably wasn't worth it, but it relates to what Huffington said. I mean, she said it wasn't. It's not theft, it's aggregation. But, yeah. You know, someone aggregated my bike last week. And I so like that joke, I could barely say it. So sorry about that.
Very good. Excellent. Anything more to say on that? No? Thank you very much. We'll leave it there. You can read more comment and analysis of it for free, actually, at mediaguardian.co.uk. I'm Matt Wells. This is Media Talk. Now, it wouldn't be right for us to go through a whole podcast without complaining at the BBC for something. Maggie, let's start with you. What are you angry about this week about the BBC? Is it something to do with the fact that they've spent nearly £11 million on consultants?
Well, it does seem rather a lot, doesn't it? And it does seem a bit unnecessary. I mean, on top of everything else that they seem to, you know, spend money on, I mean, lost handbags and, you know, private jets. I was really surprised because I thought that the era of the consultants, the overpaid consultants,
meant to have been over,
had died with John Burt. So I read the story.
He's not dead yet. He's left.
No, sorry, not died. Sorry, with him leaving his post as Director General in 2000, so well, end of 1999. So I had assumed in my kind of innocence, I suppose, that there wasn't really any need for consultants anymore. After all, you know, they've decided they're going to Manchester. They've more or less worked out what they're doing at the moment in their digital strategy, although they're about to obviously reorganise it.
There's always some new strategy, though. And I think, you can get the consultants in
consultants
for...
Consultants have got themselves really, I think, dug into the BBC. It's really... I think this is another one for the Trust to have a look at, don't you?
Oh, well that'll sort that one out then, won't it, Maggie? You know, get the Trust in, that'll soon sort it out. ITV, complaints to Ofcom have doubled in the last 4 years. X Factor is the source of most of these complaints, Maggie. Has TV got nastier?
I tell you what's happened. I think Ofcom is just completely naive. Ofcom came into power in 2003, and Ed Richards said this, assuming that there wouldn't be any complaints. I mean, they were so convinced that this was, you know, an economic regulator with, you know, free market kind of, or freeing up the market kind of powers. They completely misjudged the fact that television is a great big source of entertainment and irritation for people in this country.
And reaction of feelings.
And reaction of feelings. If you remember, one of the biggest complaints or sources of complaint early on was Jerry Springer, the opera, which was on BBC Two, and it generated huge amounts of complaint because it was just sort of plonked on a Saturday night. I think it was at 8 o'clock. And that began this sense of, oh dear, perhaps we haven't been really taking much account of what the public thinks about television. And one of the reasons there are so many complaints about things like The X Factor is that, contrary to expectations, the big shows have got just as big or bigger. So it's about remarks which may irritate people, but it's also a sign that people are really watching television and they feel they have a right to complain. Remember, the other big source over the years has been the celebrity Big Brother, Shilpa Shetty, and the whole, you know, complaints about Jade Goody's alleged racism. So I would say that Ofcom have been completely naive. Fortunately, now they've got a new chairman in Colette Bowe who understands that it's actually a consumer.
Well, she came from the consumer panel, didn't she?
Exactly. So, yeah. And, you know, she takes a real concern. If Ofcom had started monitoring, as the old IBA and ITC used to do, actually just watching programmes and actually sending out some warning signals, then I suspect they would have found themselves less deluged with complaints.
And well, John Plunkett is still here. Maggie
I'd
Brown,
like to complain to Ofcom.
I can't interrupt Maggie Brown's excellent rant against Ofcom this week. No, go on, what were you going to say?
Well, Ed Richards, he also seemed to overlook, he said in 2003 that he thought the level of complaints would go down. He seemed to completely overlook the fact that it's so much easier to complain these days, and it seems absurd to think that there are going to be fewer complaints these days.
Press your red button now.
And people are a lot more media savvy as well, and there's always the suspicion that things are fixed, even when they're not these days, because of things like Blue Peter and the scandals we've had. But the Blue Peter cat.
Is it fixed?
Oh, Sops. Cat. Sops the cat. Yeah.
I forgot about
Can't
that.
Even trust Kiss TV.
No. While we're on the subject of the X Factor, apparently Simon Cowell is going to take this around the world for the retail magnate Sir Philip Green, God help us all, and this series is going to generate... What is it, £100 million for ITV? Maggie, you're the expert on this. You've been doing some digging.
The current series of sixth series of X Factor that's on now is expected, to generate about £102.5 million for ITV, which is an enormous amount and is a sign, really, of how very, very successful it is with advertisers competing for slots. What the Philip Green deal is really extraordinary. What is being proposed is that... under the deal with Simon Fuller, Pop Idol is in America. X Factor is the Simon Cowell vehicle here, which is fairly close to Pop Idol in that it's a singing competition, not quite so pure. There are differences.
Well, they have categories, don't they, in X Factor and groups and things, whereas Idol is just one person. But it's a similar idea.
Well, Pop Idol is a simpler concept. But under the deal with Fuller, X Factor was not supposed to go to America. But clearly...
He's reneged on it.
No, I think it's been renegotiated. If it's true that it's just going to be a broadband proposition and that it will be a global kind of web show, then I suppose it gets around the problem of, straying onto
Pop Idol territory. There are some other big media names have been making interesting decisions about their careers this week. Richard Sambrook is leaving the BBC after 30 years, latest role in the World Service, of course, but he was director of news at the time of the Hutton affair. Dan Sabah, the Times media editor, is moving on. Most sadly of all, Simon Heffer is taking a sabbatical from the Daily Telegraph, who have said that he's going to return in an enhanced role in 2011. Does that just mean he's going to... put on some more weight?
Well, I mean, it's a sign of how things are changing over there that Will Lewis goes to Harvard and Simon Heffer goes to Corpus Christi.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So I don't know if he's going to rewrite their style book and the...
Maybe he could go... what's this Cambridge website that's been in the news, The Tab, that it's called? There's this raunchy students website that's in the style of The Sun. And perhaps he could go and rewrite the style book for that, maybe.
It could be an editor-in-chief role there for him, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to do some research, isn't he, at Corpus Christi. Will Lewis, you mentioned him, he's moving on as well because they moved him to Euston. After Victoria, now Euston.
It's like Monopoly, isn't it? There isn't a Victoria in Monopoly.
No, there isn't.
Or Euston. Is there a Euston?
Well, I don't know. But anyway, it was a good analogy.
I'm very sad that Dan Sabah's leaving the Times because I regard him as one of the best media writers around. And every Friday I would grab my Times and turn to page 57 or wherever his
column was. I know he was buried, but it was always a good
column. The business section, but he's an extremely good writer and very knowledgeable. And I just wait to see where he
turns
up. No, we don't. No, but it will be somewhere good. Remember, Stephen Carter, Lord Carter, is a great fan of Dan Sabah, so...
Oh, could he be moving into highly paid PR work?
He tried to recruit him, didn't he, when he was at the business department and doing his Digital Britain report.
He's being replaced by... not Dan Sabah. I'm going back to the Telegraph, and they're being... Will Lewis is being head of Future Telegraph, isn't he? And then he's being replaced by... Tony Gallagher, who is one of those refugees from the Daily Mail, is turning to the Daily Mail in exile. And I was reading those profiles of Tony Gallagher, and they're all sort of quite euphemistic, aren't they, about how he has a quote aggressive management style. Basically, he balls people out in the newsroom.
The office Rottweiler.
He is the office Rottweiler. I don't fancy working there, to be honest. I quite we'll be all right here, won't we? Do you think?
I don't know.
Let's build
The paywalls.
Yes, build the paywalls. We'll be fine after we build the paywalls. Excellent. Yes. I was going to move on, Maggie, but if you've got something else.
I was just going to say, with Richard Sambrook, I mean, this is the start, isn't it, of the winding down of the high-salaried executives who kind of duplicated their roles. Yes, because you've got a head of World Service anyway. You've got a head of BBC Monitoring and over them. And then there's the Global News Channel. So Sambrook was sort of supposedly knitting all of those together. So to some extent, he's not being replaced because he's those operations
all have putting down his knitting needles. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you very much. There are links to all these stories at guardian.co.uk/media talk. Now, it's been a while since you were last in here, John Plunkett, so let's make the most of it and finish this week with a look at what's happening on the wireless, in the world of the wireless. Let's start with Radio 2. It's been announced that Chris Evans' show will start at 7:30.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, I should say, because Wogan starts at 7:30 at the moment.
Yeah.
That has a knock-on effect for Sarah Kennedy.
It does, yes. The bad news for Kennedy fans is that she starts an hour earlier. The good news, you get another 30 minutes.
Can't wait.
So, this is as a result. Wogan used to have, as you say, a 7:30 start, which is very unusual for a breakfast show.
Yeah.
But I think it was a treat because he is Sir Terry Wogan.
Yeah.
So it's a bit more traditional now, with Evans going from 7 o'clock till 9:30.
Most commercial stations' breakfast show start at 6, so he's still doing
six to ten, so it is a bit later than normal. I think the lack of female voices on Radio 2 means that Sarah Kennedy was always going to stay in that slot. It was just a question of when she'd start.
Yeah. That's very exciting. I love her newspaper reviews. They are things of and beauty. They mostly consist of reading out the headlines from the Daily Express, as we said. So I think she's the only person in Britain who still reads the Daily Express. And Chris Evans apparently wants Moira Stewart to be his new newsreader.
He does, yes.
Is he going to get his way, do you think?
Well, they've announced the sports presenter, yes, and the weather forecast.
But they didn't announce the newsreader.
There was a glaring hole, yes. When the Guardian revealed that he wanted Moira Stewart, Evans went on Twitter and suggested it was a good idea. That's all he's said on the matter so far. So we wait and see. I think they'd be a really good pairing.
I think they'd be excellent, yes.
And also
Radio 2, isn't it?
It's very Radio 2, and it's a bit of a sop to Wogan's listeners, who might appreciate the fact that there's an older hand at work on the show. If I can say that about Moira.
Yeah, I was going to say. This is
older than Evans, at least.
I don't know Moira Stewart.
Mature hand.
Mature hand.
Yes.
Experienced.
Gift of eternal youth. She just looks about 42. She's looked the same age since she was about 42, I think. She's one of those sorts of people who never ages.
She certainly won't if she's on the radio.
That's true, yes. Meanwhile, we quite like Absolute Radio on this podcast. They continue to lead the way in online innovation. Live online listening figures are out, and they're ahead of Radio 1 and Radio 2.
They are, yes. They've got, in October, they had 6.3 million live streamed hours. I hate talking about listening hours in radio because it's so hard to get your head around. Much prefer talking about reach, but this is probably about 1 million people. Right. And with 6.3 million live streamed hours, that's more than Radio 1, which has 5.6 million, and Radio 2 with 4.6.
Right.
And this is worldwide, not just in the UK. They can't break it down into just UK at the moment, but they're hoping to in the next few months. So it's a positive sign for them, because Good. Their audience has fallen off a cliff since they rebranded in the UK.
Yes, it certainly has.
It has, according to Radar, and they dispute. They say they've got problems with the diary system because people forget it's changed name.
Yeah, and it's
absolutely incredible. Really,
you know that Absolute Vodka are continuing with their
ongoing,
yeah. Yeah. And I can't tell you why I know that.
I get the occasional mystery phone call asking me about Absolute Vodka.
Yeah,
and Absolute
I've had mystery phone calls too.
I try to get off the phone as quickly as possible.
Yes, that's it. 10 million DAB sets have been sold in the UK.
Yeah, 10 million. Yeah, so I mean, it's
still an industry divided though.
It is indeed. I mean, it's not to be sniffed at, is it? I mean, there are 8 million Freeview. I thought there were many more Freeview homes. Eight millionth Freeview home, I think, was announced last week.
Yeah.
So 10 million DAB sets, but so on the demand side, there isn't a huge problem because people seem to enjoy it, and they've sold in huge numbers. It's just the supply side that's the problem in terms of how do commercial radio operators make it pay.
Yeah.
So they're not out of the woods, but you know, clearly it's doing something right if it's that popular with listeners.
Okay. Finally, let's hear a bit of this. Isn't that nice? That's Radio 4's long-running interview programme, based on an idea by Roy Plumley, of course. It's funny how they say that, don't they, at the end of every episode, if in case you'd ever forget. It's finally been dragged into the iPod age, John.
Yes, that's right. First one this week.
Now available as a podcast.
Yep. The first guest was Morrissey, which was very clever timing and clever marketing, because clearly he's going to appeal to a slightly younger listeners.
Well, did you hear the trail on Radio 4? It wasn't this week on Desert Island Disc. It was When Kirsty Met Morrissey. That's how they sort of, you know, publicised it, as if it was some kind of meeting of great minds.
And he called her young at the end as well. It was really funny. I think Roy Plumley would be delighted it's a podcast, actually, because he raked in the money, didn't he? He owned the format.
He was the Simon Cowell of his day.
He was, yes.
I think it's perfect for a podcast, because I think you're restricted to 30 seconds of music. So, frankly, ideally, you'd like a little bit more of their choices than 20 or 25
seconds. This is the reason they haven't done it up to now, is that you can't play, you know, full tracks. But you never get the full track on the show anyway. They always fade it out after about a minute and a half. So they've cut the music down to 30 seconds, and then we are straight in at number one in the iTunes chart.
And they had long and involved discussions with the Roy Plumley's estate about actually putting it on Listen Again. So I think that was the first step a few weeks or months ago, and now it's gone into the podcast. But I think it'll be hugely popular. I know it's up there in the top 10 of the iTunes charts.
Yeah. It's just perfect.
Good. Right. Thank you very much. Lots of interesting things there. Before we go, John and Maggie, I really ought to ask you, because I'm sure you've been doing the rounds of the canapes and the champagne. What gossip have you picked up from the Christmas party circuit, Maggie?
Oh, dear me. Well, I was at Carol Stone's rather sort of glamorous party.
I knew you would be.
In Berkeley Square.
I was going to say Knightsbridge, but
Knightsbridge. No, it wasn't quite, actually. No. Oh, dear me. What did I see? Well, I saw Sir George Russell, who's the outgoing deputy chairman of ITV.
He
seemed, how can I put it, in a very mellow mood. And I think it was partly because he thinks that they have got the trophy chairman in. And whether they can hold on to Peter Fincham, who knows. But it was interesting to see somebody who felt that at last,
my work here is done, sort of thing.
Yes, I think so.
All right. John...
Well, I'm looking forward to it's the BBC party tonight, hosted by Jaina Bennett.
We shan't be saying anything about handbags.
I think handbags. And on the invite, it's a very precise invite. It says from 7 o'clock till 9:15.
Yes, it does. That
appeals to me.
I was looking at that today.
Does that mean you have to ice skate though? Because it's at Somerset.
It is at Somerset House. Should we get our skates on?
I think we should.
Dangerous parties.
Yes, okay. I think that's enough of that. Thanks to our panellists, John Plumley, guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. Find us, of course, on Facebook and Twitter. Media Talk is produced by a muted Ben Green. He hasn't fed me any decent lines today, I have to say. I'm Matt Wells. Thank you for listening. Goodbye. Actually, that's completely not true. You've fed me some quite good lines.